Slang starts as the language of pop culture, underground movements, and secret societies, a coded language meant to set closed communities apart from the everyday population. To belong, you need to understand the lingo. But of course, the slang that starts out as a kind of low-level guerrilla warfare is then abandoned by the group that originated it and adopted by the mainstream, a cycle that creates language as we know it. Writer and musician Max Descharnais writes about all of this in his new book, Vulgar Tongues, An Alternative History of English Slang. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Max Descharnais to the roundtable this morning. Max, thank you very much for being with us.
It's good to be here. Thanks for asking me.
What brought you to this particular subject of wanting to write an alternative history?
Well, I wrote a slang dictionary, a dictionary of the kind of slang that you find in pulp crime novels and jazz records and blues and that sort of thing. And that came out in 2001 in the States, and that was called Straight from the Fridge, Dad. So that was a dictionary of how people talked, and that was based on years of just being interested in the subject, buying lots of vintage music, reading lots of old pulp novels, and eventually, if you've gone at it that way, then my publisher over here in London, after I'd done a book on a completely different subject, said, okay, you've done a dictionary of slang, do you fancy writing a history of slang, which is, of course, a different thing. But that sounded like a great idea to me, so that's where it is. This is a way of talking about something much wider, because it's English slang. That's the English language, so slang from America, slang from Australia, New Zealand, Jamaica, anywhere people are using the English language in an inventive way over the past 500 years, basically.
It is a great title. Where does the idea of a vulgar tongue come from?
The vulgar tongue is just the proper name for the speech of the ordinary people. The vulgar, these days, we think of something, I don't know, indecent or something like that, whereas the great mass of the ordinary people, who you might call the mob, that comes from Latin, which is mobili vulgaris, and basically, the vulgar tongue is just the speech of the people. And my favorite slang dictionary of all time came out in 1785 here in London. And it's called the Classical Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue. That's my nod to my favorite slang dictionary is where the title came from.
You write about this in the book, but following the roots of slang is fascinating, of
sure,
how it winds its way and how some of it is very temporary. And
yeah,
other slang is around for centuries.
Really, the joy of pursuing the subject is finding things like the word groovy, for instance. Most people would peg that as a 1960s sort of hippie summer of love kind of phrase. I'd known for years that it was actually a 1940s jazz word, and it shows up in Chester Himes' first crime novel, 1945. My favorite phrase is actually from 1945 that uses the word groovy. It's actually Bing Crosby, when he was a seriously hip individual, interviewing Nat Cole, who had a jazz thing called the Nat Cole Trio. And they're live on American radio in California, and Bing says, "Say, is it a solid fact that you cats can lace your boots and beat your chops and knock the licks out groovy as a movie whilst jiving in a coming-on fashion?" And Nat just goes, "That's precisely the situation." So that's groovy in a sort of 40s bebop context. And then while writing this book, I found it in an English slang dictionary from the 1890s, where it meant completely the opposite. It was slang, but it meant an old fogey, someone who was stuck in a rut. If you think of the days of horse-drawn carriages, if your carriage gets stuck in the groove, it can't go anywhere else. You're just conforming and set in your ways.
That idea of changed meaning is fascinating. You look at centuries-old terms like rap and hip-hop.
Yeah. Rap is in Dr. Johnson's dictionary, the great English dictionary from 1755. And I love the definition he gives it. It's to utter with extreme violence. And then you've got a dictionary of phrases from the county of Yorkshire in the north of England, from the 1870s, round about that. And they're using the word rap for, you know, just having a nice conversation among each other. Here we go. It's called The Wit, Character, and Folklore and Customs of the North Riding of Yorkshire. Rap is defined as a friendly chat. And the example they give, I'm not from Yorkshire, but this is a Yorkshire accent anyway. Call the ways and let's have a pipe and a bit of rap. In other words, it's a couple of people just sort of sitting down comfortably talking. To rap off, in the same dictionary, as to speak on the spur of the moment. It was very appropriate. And raps was gossip or news. So these things, they're indestructible. They pass from one country to another, from one place to another, and everyone owns a piece of them in the end.
You have a chapter in the book entitled Uniform Patterns of Speech.
Yes.
Are there such uniform patterns?
Not really. That was purely, I was trying, that's a chapter which is basically about the slang that you get. The armed forces are always good at slang, so that's the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force in various countries. And the police, indeed. So I was trying to find a catch-all title, and I thought, well, they're all wearing a uniform, these people. So the thing about slang is, obviously, it's breaking against any uniform things. Some words are, the same word can be slang in one place, meaning one thing, and in a different place, same slang word, but meaning something else. So it's quite, it's about rule-breaking, mostly.
When you look, you mentioned early on in our conversation about the fact that you look at slang in the English language, but of course American slang, British slang,
sure.
Australian slang.
Yeah.
Does that vary greatly, and is that fun to look at as well?
It is. That is very enjoyable. There are, as you probably know, there's many things in my book that I couldn't actually name on the radio because slang tends to go into all sorts of murky areas.
Right.
But there are certain words which are slang in England, and they mean completely the opposite thing in America. Unfortunately, I can't think of a broadcastable example at the moment. The one that's springing to my mind is definitely would not go.
Okay, exactly, and I understand that, and I thank you for that, actually. But what does that say about the nature of slang? Because it is really the most usable and breathable form of language, isn't it?
As everybody always says about Cockney rhyming slang, that it was a way of, so that the police wouldn't know what you were talking about when you talked in this, what was effectively code. And the original, what was called thieves' cant 500 years ago, the language of the underworld over here was called the cant language. And that was definitely so that you could sit maybe in a coaching inn and there might be a rich traveler sitting there in the same bar with you. And you'd noticed his coach is outside and he seems to have a lot of valuables on him. So you could sit right in the same room discussing him and saying, well, when he leaves, we'll go and knock him over the head. And you could actually plan the crime in front of the victim without them knowing. One thing I find fascinating is, obviously, in the days, the early 18th century, if you committed a crime here in London and it wasn't bad enough to be executed for, they might transport you to the American colonies. So imagine you're a burglar, a housebreaker over here. You take your language with you if somebody puts you on a boat and sends you to Virginia or wherever it might be. And a lot of words seem to have lasted through that process.
Just in the course of our conversation, but throughout the book, there are many parallels between our language and music.
Sure, yeah. I've been a musician all my life. I've done a lot of, that's the main, it's been the best travel agency I've ever had. I've done many tours in America, Canada, all over Europe, Japan, and so on. And so one thing about that is getting to see, for instance, going and playing in New Orleans and finally seeing the place where a lot of my favorite 1920s and 30s jazz came from. And, of course, those words managed to travel cross back from New Orleans over here, because people in this country in the 20s and 30s, there were a lot of jazz fans, so they were picking up on the speech that was actually current in New Orleans, or the slang used in Harlem clubs, and they'd never been there, but there were enough of them that when one of the greats like Cab Calloway or Duke Ellington, they came over and played the London Palladium at the beginning of the 1930s. And there was huge crowds for them, of people who knew what a lot of these slang words that they were using in their songs, what they actually meant, never having been to those locations, but they spent a lot of time in the records.
It almost seems a bit sad when a word, a great slang word, becomes mainstream.
Sure, yeah. Usually you've got the ultra-hip people who then immediately abandon it. I give the example of Kerouac, who'd been talking about the Beat Generation since the late 40s, and then this horrible moment in his life in 1958 when an article by Herb Cahan in the San Francisco Chronicle coins the word beatnik, taking the ending Nick from the Sputnik satellite, which had recently gone up. And that caught on immediately. It caught on that day. Herb Cahan said that the following day there was an article in the rival San Francisco paper talking about a beatnik murder that had just happened. And he met Kerouac that night in a club in San Francisco, and Kerouac just said, look, you're making us out to be fools here. So the sort of beat movement has gone from something very exclusive for the in group to then there was beatnik this, beatnik that. The last 2 years of the 50s are absolutely awash with that word being really thrown around in a very strange fashion.
The book is fascinating. It's entitled Vulgar Tongues, an Alternative History of English Slang. It is published by Pegasus. Max Descharnais, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's been a pleasure for me. Thank you. I'm delighted that you asked me, and it's been very good talking to you.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Vulgar Tongues, an Alternative History of English Slang. Max Descharnais is the author. It is published by Pegasus. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.